Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good to be back. Good Thursday to you. Stuart Mandel is going to join us. Stuart, Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1, college football. It is time to talk college football. I can't wait on the July 16th. It's right around the corner. In 2 weeks, we will be at Pac-12 Football Media Day doing our thing. I'm fired up for that. The SEC is going through their media days this week, and of course, we do a ton of college football. That's what we're all about, college, high school, pro, no particular order, things that we see. They're really interesting around the state of Arizona here on sports360az.com. So we'll talk with Stuart. Michael Fabiano will be with us, our first every week fantasy football. 42 million Americans play it. It's obviously the biggest thing going around the NFL every year, and this will be our third year with Michael Fabiano, NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst, Strategy Drafts. You can shoot me questions directly, brad@sports360az.com. And then in studio in the 11 o'clock hour, Erica, you've got not just one, but two Sun Devils coming in. What is your thought
on this? You're not going to be the largest man in the studio for once. And I mean that in the nicest way
possible. You mean tallest.
You will be the tallest, but you will not be the largest.
Largest means weight, right? I mean...
Well, I don't know your weight. I don't really need to know your weight. I just know you'll be the tallest.
Man. I'm good.
Slim? I wouldn't say slim.
What are you talking about? Last 2 weeks, man, I was fit on the beaches of Carlsbad, slaying the waves. No, I'm just kidding. I was drowning. I was rolling. There's nothing better than when you're trying to relive your youth growing up as a surfer over in Southern California, a basketball kid, to get on a wave and have it just drop you and then just roll you. Like, you're so done.
It's great that we've been back on the air for less than 2 minutes and the show is already off the tracks. So it's good to be back to normal.
So who do you have coming in today?
We have Billy McGee, who is projected to be one of the starting right tackles, senior ASU lineman, and Nick Kelly.
He's going to be an NFL pick.
Who's on several awards lists.
Yeah.
Senior center. So a couple senior big uglies coming in today.
You can call them big uglies their face.
It's a term of endearment.
No, but so McGee's a tackle and Kelly's a center and it's a veteran line. I'm looking forward to that. I wonder if one could do something over the other. If one is able to get off on one guy, you know, in the weight room, let's just say, is one able to just crush the other?
Well, Christian Westerman is the strongest of all of them. Yeah. So
when Chris walks in, does everybody just kind of say, okay, done? Like, I'm able to bench my weight. Yeah, well, Chris benches five of us. So that's fun. So Nick Kelly and Billy McGee will be in studio. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports. We'll get the show back on track because otherwise Eric will just crush me. Brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Over the last couple of weeks, I have taken a huge break. It has been great, refreshed, relaxed, been driving all around the western part of the country, doing my thing as a family guy, as a dad, in the Explorer that we certify pre-owned. Bought that at Santan Ford. Also, just doing some things around the valley and around the state in my Ford Fusion, the hybrid edition. Ford is within the Sesmat household. And what about you? All right, we're here in the middle of summer. School's going to be back in session before you know it. Kids are going to get out of the house. You're going to have to transport your daughters and sons off to college, or they're going to get their first license. You've been in that space, or maybe it's just you. Maybe it's time for you to look around and say, it's time to probably get out of this vehicle. General Manager Tim Hovick and company, they do it right at Santan Ford. Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. When I say do it right, I don't mean that flippantly. They're very involved corporately, civically around the valley, which means a lot to me. And the Ford name, what else can I say? Terrific. Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Stuart Mandel here in about 10 minutes. So the Diamondbacks are off today. They start the second half of the season tomorrow. We'll get much more into that tomorrow. Pedro will be with us after he was at the All-Star game. That was a great All-Star game. I was actually out at a sports bar, a very prominent one named after a basketball coach. And there was nobody there watching the game. So I was stunned. I was in a booth with a good friend of mine, and it was like, where is everybody? And so that was a bit disappointing on the game itself. The Diamondbacks had an awful end to the first half of the season, getting swept in New York, but turned the page, move forward. Three with the Giants, try to get back into it. The Giants are the team in front of them. I still don't believe the Diamondbacks are out of this race, and I do believe a major deal is coming. You will hear a lot about Randy Johnson tomorrow with the Hall of Fame. Randy tomorrow will be meeting with the media at noon. That's coming up here in a couple of weeks where Randy goes into Cooperstown. Of course, you've been hearing about Randy in Piastowa Parkway, which no offense to anybody. It's just I don't know anybody who calls it Piastowa Parkway. It's not a slap. That's just a fact. It's not anything towards the Piastowas or the families themselves. It's just simple that, hey, I'm taking the 51 over to the 10 and then I'm going to L.A. Where are you at right now? I'm on the 51 and I'm getting off at Shea and I'm going to make a left. I'm going to go to Coffee Plantation. Where are you at right now? I'm off the 51. I'll get over to Horizon High School. That's all I know. I don't even know it as Randy Johnson Parkway, but nonetheless, it's the middle of summer and people have to find something to bitch about. I watched a little bit of the ESPYs last night. It was dreadful. It was painful. I mean, the stuff about Lauryn Hill was great. I didn't stick around for the Jenner stuff. All the Jenner stuff is so guys like me come in here today and say, did you see that? And, oh, she's going to do this show and that show. And it's just Mickey and ABC and a sports property that's trying to find ways to get into your Twitter feed. That's it. That's all that was last night. It's the middle of summer. There's nothing going on. They would never put a show like that on the air in the middle of football season. So you're doing filler and you're doing something to push your other brands. It's the business. On more serious stuff, so I thought Todd Graham handled the story of Devon Durant the right way. So he's not going to play this year. He's not going to play at ASU. Durant was a five-star linebacker, a five-star player that was brought into Arizona State, and there was so much made about him. Junior college stud out of Kansas. He's going to come to ASU, and he's going to solidify this linebacking core that needed some help. It was a huge get. Many of you Sun Devil fans were so excited to have him, and you're going to crush U of A and all that stuff. All right, it's fine. So he was arrested in March, pleaded guilty, a single misdemeanor of disorderly conduct, 2 years of supervised probation. It was a physical fight with his girlfriend. The girlfriend tried to back out of the story. ASU told Durant he's got to go through court-ordered domestic violence counseling before applying for readmission. And so I don't know what happened beyond that. Did he not follow through? All I know is Todd Graham told Sports Illustrated, he didn't even tell anybody here locally, and he's got his locals, it's fine. He didn't tell anybody locally. He went to the biggest outlet out there and said, quote, he's done. We parted ways. He put himself in that position. It's a bad deal, but you've got to have accountability. So when I see the word accountability, it's, did he fess up to his actions? Did he follow through? We don't just talk about character and discipline. We live it. So we have Billy McGee and Nick Kelly here in studio and two Sun Devils that I'm sure we're going to talk about character and all that and the Todd Graham approach with the story here. More from Todd Graham. No matter what the legal system does, our standards are high and our guys know that. They know they're going to be held accountable. So to follow through on something like that with it not being the fifth string tight end that nobody's ever heard of, but it being your top recruit from the community college end and a player that would help you immensely on the defensive side of the football. Remember, opening up with Texas A&M is probably the most, Eric, wouldn't you say that of the college football opening weekend, that ASU Texas A&M is the best game out there.
If not the best, one of the top two.
What are the others? Give me some. Is it Utah, Michigan?
I mean, you're going to have, I believe.
Utah, Michigan?
Does Texas play Notre Dame in the first weekend? I believe they do. That's not going to have, nationally those are two, those are two, you know, storied programs.
Sure.
But the better game is going to be ASU and A&M.
Over under, Steve Patterson, the AD, when that game takes place?
Yes.
You think?
Yeah. A year from now? We'll see.
Really interesting what's going on with Steve Patterson. We're going to talk to Stuart Mandel about it. So the former Arizona State Sun Devil AD who went to Texas, and since he's gone to Texas, I think he took Steve Hank with him. In fact, I know he did. And I think Steve has been the guy that has been like the buffer between the media and Steve. And poor Steve Hank, who was a nice guy over at ASU, is just caught in this. I moved down here, and now I may get fired. When the president of Texas comes out and says, we need Steve Patterson to dial it back a little bit because some of the things he said towards alums, it's a pretty smart business plan. You can go get into a program and you can tell boosters that have given millions and millions through the years that we're going to start charging you $25 to walk down to the practice field. And they're going to be like, huh? What? And that's what Steve did. And then they'll fire him, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because he's going to walk away with a ton of jack. So we're going to talk about that as the show moves on too with Stuart Mandel here in a few minutes. Watching Tiger this morning at the British Open, he's so bad. And I called a couple of my friends, guys who follow the sports world and have lives outside of everything. And I said, do you remember the days where you just would sit for 4 hours and watch an entire round of Tiger Woods? And how now it's become almost like a punchline. And it's just this morning, his opening tee shot, he clubs it into the ground, hits it about 50 yards short of his playing partner, Louis Oosthuizen. His second shot on the first hole, he hits into the water. He ends up just having a miserable, miserable day out on the course. Dustin Johnson is running away with it right now, playing very, very well. But when we see greatness go to this level, to drop to this level, like Steve Nash at the end was injured, and Steve didn't play a whole lot of defense his last few years with the Suns, but people were willing to forget about that because Steve was still hitting shots and running the offense. It was exciting to watch. It's kind of the same thing. I mean, Steve Nash is a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. Tiger Woods, obviously one of the best golfers ever. I was very, very young when Miller finished, when Nicklaus finished. So I don't recall it being like this. I can't get point of reference. To see Tiger just slug it out and be dreadful, it's hard. College football on National View next with Stuart Mandel. Quite a bit, though, on ASU. Who's under more pressure? Is it Rich Rod or is it Todd Graham with their roster this year? I want to talk to Stuart about that. The tenure of these two guys. How much longer can you see Todd Graham and Rich Rod being in Arizona? I want the fearless predictions and much more. That's next with Stuart Mandel. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ.
Later in today's show, Billy McGee and Nick Kelly, two of the starting linemen for Arizona State, will stop by in studio. It's the middle of July, all right? It's supposed to be 110 today. It's Pac-12 media days, or in a couple of weeks, we'll have the show out there live. We're really geeked up for the start of what figures to be a great year for both U of A and ASU here in the state. Sports 360 AZ, we partner with the Arizona Republic. Brad Sussmat with you. Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1 college football insider Stuart Mandel joins us for a couple of minutes. How are you, Stuart?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm counting down. How's that? I'm in a state that I think has two pretty interesting college football programs, so I'm not looking forward to college basketball season as much as I am the football season. How's that for an answer?
Yeah, well, it's probably one of the rare times, right, in recent years for both those programs. I mean, one won the South Division last year. The other will probably be picked, I don't know, no lower than second when the poll comes out at Pac-12 Media Day. So it's a great time right now for the state of Arizona and college football.
Let's start in reverse. The national title game is going to be played here for the college football playoff. Who, from your view, is going to be in this game?
Oh, geez, we got to start right there.
Let's start at the end, and we'll work our way backwards.
Well, the team to beat is obviously Ohio State. They bring back so many key figures from last year's run. You know, what makes this harder to have these kind of conversations now than in the BCS era is, you know, they're my no-brainer pick of any of the teams to make the playoff. Doesn't necessarily mean they would win that semifinal game. You know, Alabama was the number one seed last year and lost to Ohio State, but they would clearly seem the team to beat, and a team I'd feel confident thinking will be there. Outside of that, you know, there's a lot of usual suspects out there, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think last year, you saw the Baylor-TCU controversy, and they both ended up getting left out of the playoff. Would not be surprised if you wanted them to make it in this year. It's a toss-up a little bit. They both returned most of their key guys. I wouldn't be surprised if Baylor gets the nod this year.
Okay, so let's go from the title game to the Pac-12 title game. Your view, Pac-12 title game this year.
Well, Oregon is still the team to beat, and I know there's a lot of mystery surrounding the quarterback position. Will Vernon Adams be able to come in and win that job? And it was only a few weeks of lead-up time. But you know, at this point, we know we can count on Oregon to win 11, 12 games every year, be in contention. And I think, to me, they're the overwhelming pick to win the North, whereas the South, is so deep, I can see five of the 6 teams, anyone but Colorado, winning that division. And even Colorado, I expect, will be better. It's not ready to win the division just yet. ASU's been my pick so far to win the South. You know, I can see an Oregon-Arizona State championship game.
If you're looking at Arizona and Arizona State, better program right now, who's in better shape?
Well, it's hard to argue against Arizona, right, because they just won the division title. But I do think that ASU has a nice little track record under Todd Graham right now and is probably just a little bit better positioned going forward. It's a toss-up. I mean, I think they're both in very good shape. They have the right coaches in place. I guess I would just give a slight nod to ASU.
I think what I'm seeing out here, Stuart, we're talking about Stuart Mandel. I've been here 20-plus years. And the facilities at both places have been dumps. There's no other way to put it. And finally, they've been able to turn the Titanic around. Greg Byrne was able to get his stadium situation quicker than what's happened at Arizona State. Yesterday, they just started pouring the south end zone and some other things within Sun Devil Stadium. But from a national perspective, does it make a change of the perception if the facilities out here are upgraded at ASU and U of A along with the on-the-field product, or are they still just one of those programs that's always going to be between 10 and 20 and nothing higher?
Well, you know, I wrote last week about underachieving programs historically, and Arizona State was on my list because they're a team that I feel has always had the potential and still has the potential to be better than they are, to be a playoff contender. I don't think that's unrealistic. Arizona, it's a little bit harder for them being down the road, basically, primarily. But, you know, can they be in that position? Sure, they haven't done it very often in their history. They don't have the precedent of the Jake Plummer Rose Bowl year. So, in terms of facilities, that's just, sadly, in college athletics today, that's become the bare minimum requirement. If you don't have those facilities, then, well, everybody else has them. So,
right.
It's great that they're upgrading their facilities, but it's just become this arms race, and I don't know that it has that much of a difference. I do think you can't have terrible facilities. I think that's obviously not good for recruits, but and I don't know the specific plans, but I'm assuming that they're going to open one of these palatial headquarters that has a barber shop and waterfalls and all the things that they put in these things now.
Right.
And it'll be awesome for the ASU and for their fans, but that just makes them one of 20 programs that has that. Utah has that. USC has that. Oregon obviously has that. So I don't know that it helps you win games. It just, you know, it helps you. What it does is it helps you retain coaches, because coaches don't want to be at places that aren't committed and aren't willing to put the money toward facilities.
And I agree with you on that. I mean, I think eventually someone's going to come after Rich Rod in a bigger way. It may be LSU when Les Miles leaves with Rich's ties down there with Tulane and all that. Todd Graham, who knows what happens in the Big 12, and we'll get into that in a second. But I don't sense that either one of these guys are going to be lifers at either facility where they are right now. Would you agree or disagree on that?
Oh, I think Todd Graham's track record makes it so that you kind of will see it. I believe it when I see it, that he's there for 10 years or something like that, or even 5 years for that matter. Rich Rod, I'm sure he'll be tempted. I mean, if they continue to win, he's still respected. But he has the experience of having left for supposedly greener pastures and then just blew up in his face. He's got a great situation there. Greg Byrne's one of the absolute best ADs to work for. Now, your issue there is Greg Byrne will eventually move on. I mean, he's got his eyes on very high level. I mean, I could see him being a commissioner of a major conference at some point or high up in the NCAA.
Agree.
But as long as he's there, you know, you couldn't ask for a better AD to work for. I mean, I just can't see Rich Rod running just any old opportunity, because I do think he learned his lesson and he's got a really good situation there.
Stuart Mandel, Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1 College Football Insider with Brad Sussmat. A couple other questions, we'll let you go. Greg Sankey takes over at the SEC. At the SEC Media Days, he was asked about the fifth-year seniors and all of that that's going on. You alluded to it earlier with the quarterback situation at Oregon. There was some conversation about maybe a fifth-year needs to sit out a year. I don't know what the answer is to that. Do you have a view on these transfer fifth-year senior eligibles?
Well, I think a lot of people in college athletics get uneasy about it, because it's just that's not the way college athletics have traditionally worked. I mean, this offseason in particular, it felt at times like free agency. You know,
yeah.
People were tracking Everett Golson's every move as he visited campuses after he transferred from Notre Dame. And so at meetings this spring, at conference meetings and the college football playoff meetings, I heard commissioners and ADs say, we got to do something about this. And there was immediately a backlash from people like myself and others that cover the sport saying, hey, you guys say you're all about student-athlete welfare, that you want to do what's best for the student-athletes. How can you take away the one rule where, you know, there's so many restrictions on transfers where they're actually rewarded? You get your degree. If you're not happy in the situation you're at, this is the one situation where you can transfer somewhere else and not have to sit out a year. And since then, I've heard talk of that quiet down quite a bit. You know, I think it makes coaches uncomfortable. Obviously, I feel for the coach at Eastern Washington who groomed Vernon Adams and then loses him. But at the same time, coaches can up and move. If the coach of Eastern Washington gets a call from a Pac-12 school next year, he's going to jump at it. And he's not going to have to sit out a year. So I don't think there's a lot of sympathy out there for the coaches who lose these guys.
This is kind of a broad question here. I'm just seeing if you can put it into make some sense of it. We're hearing about Power 5 down to Power 4. If 10 years ago, Stuart, you and I are sitting here having this conversation about the strength of college football, and I said to you, you said to me, you know, TCU and Baylor are going to be in the Final Four every year. I would have said, yeah. Are you kidding me? That's not are you joking? So what has happened in the last 10 years, A, that's put them in that position, and then tie that into, will we see Power 5 go to Power 4?
Everybody kind of thinks that's a natural progression, that will actually be 4 16-team conferences. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I do think that there'll eventually be some sort of consolidation, just even among the power conference schools, because let's face it, there's a big difference between Florida State and Wake Forest are both considered Power 5 schools, but they're completely different programs. There's almost nothing in common there other than they both play in the ACC. So maybe one day, as this continues to be such a bigger and bigger money sport, maybe we see the top 25 or 30 programs break off and form some sort of, you know, super football confederation. But I don't see any one of the current five conferences just completely going away. You know, the Baylor though is a good example of you know, it is possible. For 13 years they seem like completely hopeless in the Big 12. I believe they went, you know, 0-8 or 1-7 almost every single year. And like you said, the idea that they are now back-to-back Big 12 champs and a popular pick to make the playoff is unbelievable, but it shows you the parity is better in college football now than it's ever been. And if you get the right coach, and that's really, I think, more than any sport, pro or college, having the right coach makes such a big difference in college sports. If Art Briles, you know, brings his kind of wacky offense from that he drafted at the high school rank and can use it to turn Baylor from a doormat into a conference champion, then you realize that's possible for pretty much almost any of those 65 power conference schools.
Yeah, I just think you don't want to end up being Iowa State or UConn at some point. You know, where do those schools show up now and moving forward?
And the difference, of course, Baylor is in the state of Texas.
Yep.
Not too far from Dallas, major talent in their backyard. You know, it is schools, like you just mentioned, that don't have that natural recruiting base that are going to continue to struggle. And frankly, you know, as much TV revenue as there is pouring into this sport, even those schools still struggle a little bit financially because the cost of competing at the highest level just keep going up and up.
Stay well. Appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Stuart Mandel with us, Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1, College Football Insider. Good stuff there. On the other side, you have your questions for Michael Fabiano. It's our first of what it'll be like 20, 30 weeks with the Hall of Famer from the NFL Network talking fantasy football. That is next, getting you ready for your draft. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Giving you fantasy football insight you can't get anywhere else. With NFL Network and NFL.com fantasy expert Michael Fabiano, here's Brad Sussmat.
You're number three with a Hall of Famer. He's agreed to come back. I don't know why, but it's good to have you back. I'm not complaining, but I haven't talked to you in a while. Thanks, Michael, for coming back for another year.
Come on. You know I'd be back.
Of course.
It's a pleasure to be working with you and Eric. Always fun. Always a lot of fun.
Well, we appreciate it. We have a good time here. Fantasy football, NFL Network senior fantasy analyst, and the Hall of Famer. Michael Fabiano, we're from here forward. It's time to get ready. It's time to get serious. This is about the time, right? I mean, there are those that do it year-round, but around the middle of July, people start to get going, right?
Yeah, you're starting to look at rankings if you haven't already. You're gearing up for following which training camp battles are going to be the most important. And you also have to keep tabs of the news of Tom Brady's appeal on his four-game suspension, Le'Veon Bell, to see if his suspension is decreased at all. So there's a lot to keep tabs on right now. And most people, hopefully, won't be having their drafts anytime soon. But certainly keeping tabs on the news and adjusting your rankings accordingly is always important.
I've had three questions shot at me about Antonio Gates already this morning when people heard you coming on. So let's just start with one of these off-the-field things. What do you do with Gates?
I was in a mock draft last week with my pals here from NFL Fantasy Live, and I drafted him in the next-to-last round because why not? I can sit on him for 4 weeks. And earlier in the draft, I had taken Martellus Bennett. So what I would do with Gates is exactly that. The tight end position is weak. I mean, really weak this year after you get past the first two guys, and even Jimmy Graham is going to be someone who won't produce like he did in New Orleans now that he's in Seattle. You've got Travis Kelce, monster upside. You've got Greg Olsen, who's got consistency on his side. Martellus Bennett had a good year in 2014. After that, there's a drop-off. You're hoping for guys like Zach Ertz to potentially break out this season. You're hoping for Jason Witten to come back and be the tight end that he was. So it doesn't hurt if you have a tight end who isn't one of the top five to go ahead, draft Gates late and just sit on him. He's going to come back and return to being one of Phillip Rivers' top options in the offense. Now, he's not going to duplicate what he did last year. He wasn't going to even if he played a full 16 games. But the position is so weak right now that it makes sense to draft him, sit on him, and after the Chargers' first four games, if your tight end position has been weak, well, you strengthen it a bit. You can also draft Gates and Ladarius Green if you want to. Green's got a lot of potential. We've talked about him for the last couple of years. Now he's going to get that opportunity to produce in the first 4 weeks.
You talk about position battles. We're busy with Michael Fabiano, NFL Network senior fantasy analyst. By the way, your fantasy running back projections and offensive coordinator tendencies are coming out today, right?
It is. I filed it last night. A lot of HTML that the editors are working on right now. It was a lot of work. Basically, I looked back at what run percentages offenses had last year with the offensive coordinators that were calling the shots. And then a lot of the new offensive coordinators, I believe there's 11 this year, if you count Scott Linehan, who is now taking over complete control of the offense. Last year it was Callahan and Linehan. So I looked back and saw what they like to do in terms of run percentage. Some of these offensive coordinators have never been OCs in the NFL. So I went back and looked at what they did in college as offensive coordinators. And the running back position to me is the most important in fantasy football. And anyone who drafted Monte Ball or Zach Stacy know this. And anyone who picked up C.J. Anderson off the waiver wire last season know this. It's extremely important. It's a thin position, not as thin as tight end, but having a good stable of running backs is really, really important. So once that piece is up, I'll be tweeting it out, and hopefully people will check it out and enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. And I have a ton of questions that people are sending in, multiple questions about running back situations in various camps. So let's go with Detroit, running back situation in Detroit with Amir Abdullah and that whole crew, and then we'll go to a couple of others.
Well, I'm on record. I love Abdullah. I think he is going to end up being the leading touches contributor in that backfield. Joique Bell is likely to open the season as the starter, although he's coming off of knee and Achilles injuries. He hadn't done anything in OTAs, and that gave Abdullah an opportunity to shine, which he did, and he was very good. So he is someone that I would be targeting somewhere in the middle to late rounds, maybe round eight, somewhere in that area of a 10-team league, because I really think the long-term potential with him this season is great. I don't know that Theo Riddick is really going to make a huge impact in the backfield. He's going to come in and play a little bit more sparingly than Bell, than Abdullah. But if you like upside and you like guys who can take the ball to the house almost every time they touch it, Abdullah, despite the fact that he's a little undersized, is the guy that I would target in Detroit.
New Orleans, getting a lot on C.J. Spiller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the reason why is they lost a lot of backfield targets, Brad, in the offseason. Mm-hmm. You released Pierre Thomas, Travis Cadet is now with the New England Patriots. Those guys combined caught over 80 passes. So they didn't bring in anyone but Spiller to replace that production. And I know every year it seems like we're talking about, oh, this is the year for C.J. Spiller. Well, if this isn't the year for C.J. Spiller, then he is never going to do it because he's got Drew Brees at quarterback. He's got Sean Payton running the offense. And he is in a system that has been conducive to running backs who can catch the ball out of the backfield succeeding. Pierre Thomas, Cadet had 38 catches, I believe, last year. Mm-hmm. Reggie Bush, Darren Sproles. Now Spiller can be next. It's going to be a Spiller and Ingram committee, although Ingram will lead that committee. He'll be the early down back, the goal line back, and the running back in that backfield to target. He'll likely be a second or third round pick. If you're in a standard league, I see Spiller as a 3 or a 4. If you're in a PPR league, I could see him being as good as an RB2. Now, I'm saying this knowing that Spiller has more often than not failed to meet expectations. But again, different offense, different quarterback, Hall of Fame quarterback. He couldn't be in a better situation to succeed in terms of being a pass catcher.
Michael Fabiano with us, NFL Network, senior fantasy analyst talking fantasy football. Now that we're past the midpoint of July, every week Michael will be with us for the third straight year. Brad Sussmat, Sports 360 AZ. A lot of questions about Cleveland and Duke Johnson. Now, you're not a big rookie guy. You know, through the years, you and I have talked about this, but I'm getting a lot of questions from about Cleveland.
It's rookie, wide receiver, tight end, or quarterback. Running back, I'm a fan,
okay. Especially
when there's opportunities. I mean, we missed out on Bishop Sankey last year, and Jeremy Hill came into a situation in Cincinnati where he looked like he was going to be a backup, entered the season as a backup. Giovanni Bernard goes down, Hill goes off, and now he's a top 12 fantasy running back. So the situation in Cleveland is I like Duke Johnson out of the three of them. I like to look at trends. You know that. We've been doing this for years.
Yep.
And the trend of Miami of Florida running backs coming into the NFL and succeeding, boy, it's pretty good. Clinton Portis, Willis McGahee, Frank Gore. I mean, the list goes on and on of guys who have come in. Lamar Miller last year had a really good season. So that is something that I like to look at. And Duke Johnson basically smashed every record of any Miami of Florida running back while he was in college. He's versatile. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. They lined him up in the slot during OTAs. Now, I know they have Isaiah Crowell, who will likely end up being the starter to start the season, and Terrence West is in the mix too. But based on talent, Duke Johnson is the player to draft, and he is the guy that will likely cost you less. You're going to end up drafting Isaiah Crowell somewhere in the middle rounds, whereas Duke Johnson will be more of a middle to late round pick. But I really like this guy, and maybe I'm going to be a year too early on him, but the potential for him to put up some numbers in that offense is there, and Cleveland's going to run the ball a lot because their quarterback situation and wide receiver situation, although it was better than it was last year before Josh Gordon came back,
mm-hmm.
It's shaky at best.
Okay, and I'm trying to sift through all this. So, you and I can go on running backs, but just one more. I'm getting mm-hmm. a lot of questions, some on the negative side about DeMarco Murray, some on the positive side. Where are you at on DeMarco Murray from a fantasy value this year?
I don't see him even coming close to what he did last season. And if you check out that column that it will be up on NFL.com at some point today, you'll see why. Murray had over 440 touches last year. Had over 390 carries, 392 to be exact. Number one, when running backs have that many carries, typically the following year their numbers go down or they get hurt. It's happened quite a bit. Also, you go from Dallas, where you're the featured back, to Philadelphia, where you're starting and you'll be mostly featured, but Ryan Matthews is also in the mix. If you look last year at LeSean McCoy, he had just over 300 carries. He had in the neighborhood of 340 touches. Even that is 100 fewer touches than Murray had last year, and he still didn't score 300 fantasy points. DeMarco Murray is going to score 100 fewer fantasy points this year, and that's if he stays healthy for a full 16 games. That's why you're seeing a guy who was number one in terms of points at running back last year not being drafted until the second round. Mm. I would draft him as an RB2. I would draft him with caution because as much as I love DeMarco, I'm really afraid that he's going to get hurt this year and miss maybe 6 to 8 games. And you've got Ryan Matthews there as well. You've got Darren Sproles there as well. The Eagles certainly don't care much about fantasy football, and Chip Kelly doesn't either. He wants to win, so he is not going to put DeMarco Murray in there 390 times to carry the football. And remember this, and I guarantee this is going to happen. There's going to be series where the Eagles are going to utilize Murray. You get down near the goal line, they bring in Ryan Matthews. And vice versa, there will be series where they use Ryan Matthews, get near the goal line, and maybe DeMarco Murray comes in. So people are going to be tearing their hair out over this situation. Don't draft DeMarco until the second round, and do it knowing that the numbers are almost guaranteed to drop by maybe 100 fantasy points.
Hey, before I let you go, and this is really good stuff here, let's say I'm picking fifth. Based on all the drafts that you've done, and I think picking six, picking eight, from a strategy standpoint, if you're right in the middle of the first round, what are you seeing in trends so far of here's the best value that's going to be there at number five? By that I mean, Michael, you go through Peterson and Dez and others. Do you get to five and there's a huge drop-off? Or, no, Brad, this is a year where, trust me, you're going to find really, really talented players at five just as much as number one. You know what I mean by that?
I do. And this is a year where there's not a consensus number one pick. It would be Le'Veon Bell, but he's suspended for 3 games, at least right now. I have Peterson number one, and then I have Bell, Charles, Arian Foster, and Eddie Lacy. I don't see a drop-off from any of those 5 players. So if I'm at number 5, I'm going to get Foster, I'm going to get Lacy, I'm going to get Marshawn Lynch. And I'm thrilled with that, okay? Marshawn Lynch has had a lot of carries, more than any other running back in the last 4 years, but did you watch him last year? Did he look like he was slowing down? Maybe this is the year he breaks down, but I didn't see it. I don't think anybody saw it. In fact, if the Seahawks gave him the football near the goal line in the Super Bowl, we may be talking about the Seahawks three-peating in 2015. But I don't see a drop-off. Where I see the drop-off is after you get past the 8th overall pick, where at running back you're looking at LeSean McCoy, who from a volume perspective should do fine, but that offensive line is trash, and it was last year in terms of run blocking.
Wow.
It was one of the 3 worst run blocking offensive lines based on Pro Football Focus. It was not good, and they really didn't do anything to improve it during the offseason. And you're also looking at a guy, for example, like C.J. Anderson, who everyone loves, who should do very well in that offense under Gary Kubiak. It's not a guarantee. Jeremy Hill, great last year. I expect him to have a very good year. Giovanni Bernard, still in that backfield. Not a guarantee that he's going to put up huge numbers. Then you're going a little bit past those running backs, and you're looking at DeMarco Murray and Mark Ingram and Melvin Gordon and Frank Gore. I can give you a question mark on just about every one of the top 10 running backs on my list, outside of maybe Eddie Lacy. I think he might be the safest pick, but I don't know that he has as high of a ceiling as Adrian Peterson, say, because, well, Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback there. It's not like they're not going to throw the football. So there are question marks all over the place at running back. With that being said, you still need to focus on the position because it is extremely important to fill it in the early rounds. If you don't, you're going to have a backfield situation that's going to drive you nuts unless you get lucky. And let's be honest, if you picked up C.J. Anderson last year or you had Jeremy Hill, there's a little luck involved, okay? I'm not adverse to saying that. Unless you get lucky with someone off the waiver wire, you're going to be looking at playing the matchups every week. And at running back, that's very tough.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and your insight as always. Look forward to it next week. Thanks, Michael.
All right, brother. Take care.
You got it, pal. Michael Fabiano, NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst. Always good to have Michael in studio. So I've got a couple of Sun Devil linemen that are going to be in here. We have this palatial buffet that we roll out before and after shows. They're going to crush it. I'm just kidding. But we're really looking forward to having Billy and Nick here in a few minutes. But on the other side, I want to get into Tiger this morning at the British Open and some other stuff on my mind in the world of sports before we go heavy AASU football in hour two. I'm Brad Sussmat. We'll be right back. What was cool about being away for a couple of weeks is you just unplug from this in the middle of summer, and I went back home to Carlsbad, and I tried to catch a couple of 6-foot, 8-foot waves that were just mistakes. But it's cool when you're rolling around in the sand because you just couldn't hold your body up. Like, I'm sitting here during the break talking to Billy McGee and Nick Kelly, and these two guys, man, they would break me over their knee, and when they're going to be up here in a few minutes, I can't give them any crap. Eric, have you sensed that? Like, we can't mess around in this segment after 11?
I'm going to leave that up to you because I'm on the other side of the glass. So whatever happens to you in the studio, I really don't care.
Well, when we had Kyle Allen and Christian Kirk in studio like a month ago, right? We're talking about a wimpy little quarterback and a little runt of a wide receiver, a couple little college or high school misfits that we've seen through the years. Then it was fine to give them a hard time. I think Christian came in wearing some shirt showing off his guns. He has no guns compared to these two guys coming in here. So, you know, I'd like to leave here in a good space today. So I'm not going to screw that interview up. Is there anything they said I've got to stay away from with them? Anything at all?
No. There is no, there are no guidelines.
Completely unplugged, unfiltered. Like, I could get into their diets. Do I want to do that? Like, their calorie intake?
They're offensive linemen. You'd be remiss if you didn't.
They're linemen. I know. But see, that's the thing with linemen. They always get the, media guy, what did you eat today? So, I don't know. I want to do a little different. I don't want it to be the same old crapola that we do. So Tiger this morning, I get up early and I'm excited that it's the British Open or the Open, as they want to say over there, whatever. Guys, I can't think of a player that I've seen through the last 20, 25 years in sports that has had such a crash and burn effect as Tiger Woods. It was on top of it. Eric, is there anybody that you can think of? I mean, nationally, internationally, and it's not just the off the course stuff with him. You know, the personal stuff has got to be the reason why. I mean, even the commentators today said when Tiger was on the tee today, they walked with him yesterday. They saw him on the practice range this morning. And they said Tiger today on the practice tee was great. And then when he stepped up to the number one tee, that he looked really nervous and shaky and anxious. And so he chunks his tee shot. I mean, that's something I do over at, you know, Ocotillo. I throw it into the water or whatever. And then his second shot, he hits into the water. And so when you see greatness fade, like every great player fades. Jake is a good friend. Jake Plummer is going to be back with us for another year. We're going to do another year with Jake. And when Jake was towards the end, his body started barking at him saying, I've been beat on too much. I can't do what I once did. That's fine. When Steve Nash finished with the Lakers, he couldn't move defensively. And by his own admission, he knew he couldn't move defensively. Players fade. But when you see the greatest, like when Michael Jordan finished, it was time for him to go, but he got out. I don't know if Tiger's just one of these days going to snap. Like this morning when he finished his round, he gave the same old stuff about how I'm this close, I've got it figured out. And maybe he does. But when you shoot an 80 at the Open Championships, and then you come in today and you go to the British, and you're basically out of it off your first round today. He was basically out of it after his second shot. He's 12 back. He's 12 back on day one. And it's great for the sport when they're in their prime, but man, on the backside, you don't want to bury. I'm not burying a guy here today. All I'm pointing out is the greatest single athlete in his sport that we have seen over the last 20 years has faded so fast. It's like one day the switch came on and boom, done. Now, I'm not going to equate that to Nick Kelly and Billy McGee here next. Like, one day the switch is going to be done. Those guys are linemen. They'll crush me. They're coming up in the next segment. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports, year number three of getting it done day in and day out. I'm Brad Sussman. Off we go in hour number two. Thanks for being with us. I'm not going to make it through this hour. We have Billy McGee and Nick Kelly with me here in studio today. ASU football gets started with Pac-12 Media Day in a couple of weeks. It's 2 weeks from today, actually. out in Los Angeles. And then Eric for sure is going to the Texas A&M ASU game. I'm not sure. I've got a couple other things I may go to. But in the center is the center, Nick Kelly. And to the outside is Billy McGee. And Billy was sitting behind the scenes while I was doing the last segment, and he started pointing towards a monitor saying, hey, so what goes on up there? Jared just poked his head in. Do we have something for Billy? Did we get him a custom backdrop? Is that what you wanted? Do you have it? In a minute? Okay. So we'll get to it in a second. So you're already like stirring things up here. What is the deal? I mean, I invite you, and you're telling me to serve filet mignon or something. You want your own custom backdrop. I mean, what's that all about?
Oh, no, just trying to make it feel like home, you know?
Yeah? That's a Texas thing, right?
Yes, sir.
Down there.
Maybe the backdrop. Texas flag, maybe?
Maybe.
So if you guys weren't here, you'd be eating, right? Let's get into the food jokes right away for Lyman. Do you guys just crush it over lunch, breakfast, dinner as linemen?
Yes, but to Coach Thompson, no. But no, we make sure that we eat the right amount of portions. Our health and nutritionist Amber, she really knows her stuff about nutrition, and we go off what she has to say about all the things we need to eat. So we make sure that it's balanced with a lot of protein, a lot of carbs, so we have energy for the runs and conditioning.
Is it all specified to you and you, or is it just as linemen, this is what you need to do? Or do they sit with each one of you individually?
They sit with each one of us. I know Billy has sat with...
I've been having some like weight issues, and so I was able to go meet with Amber, and she gave me a personal... Hey, this is how much you need to be eating, all this stuff, and broke it down to me. Like, each little meal needs to have this exact, like, amount of food.
Okay, so when you say weight issues, is it gaining, losing, being too heavy, being
too
light?
I'm a little too heavy right now.
Okay, and where do you want to be?
Right now, I'm 314. I want to get down to about 310 for the season.
Okay, so you're 4 pounds over, which to the average person watching this is like, what, are you kidding me?
Well, before I was like 326.
So you were really pounding away in the
season. I was kind of enjoying the food, yes.
Yeah. So what does she tell you? Does she look you in the eye and say, dude, tone it down? Does it start with her, or does it start with someone else within the program about you're heavy, we got to get you to the right space? Take fans through that.
Well, we have a great strength staff and great coaches, and so they'll watch us during workouts and everything, and they'll notice that, like, hey, I wasn't making my times or something like that. And so they really help, like, analyze to see what your problem is. And so they were saying, hey, we notice that you're kind of heavy right now.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that if you got to this weight, you'll do a lot better. And so they had me meet with Amber, and I completely agree with them on the whole, I mean, lighter, you're quicker.
Did you know that you were heavy?
Yeah, when you look down and you see your stomach, you know you're kind of heavy.
If you can't see your shoestrings, you're in trouble.
Exactly.
Now, how about yourself, Nick?
No, I haven't really had a weight issue. When I first got to ASU, I was about 265. I was real light, so they wanted me to gain weight. So I didn't really have to worry about like watching my figure or anything or watching the, what I ate. I just ate to gain weight so I could handle the D1 D lineman.
When you, do you stand in front of a mirror and watch your figure, as you put it?
Oh, yeah, you know it. No, yeah. I'm joking. No, I just make sure that, like, I'm not always eating junk food or I'm not always going out. I like to, me and Billy, we live together. So we like to buy chicken, marinate it, and barbecue. We have a nice barbecue in the backyard.
Oh, that's cool.
We're actually pretty good cooks.
Yeah. Who's the better cook?
Well... He's good at grilling, even though I think I'm good at grilling too.
Texas.
You know, from Texas,
Texas.
Like it's in my blood.
Right.
But I was blessed with a mom who can cook, and so before I came to college, I made sure that like she taught me some, so I wouldn't just be eating ramen. So
like most college,
I do all the sides and stuff, and then Nick, you know, does the grilling.
Yeah,
I give it to him.
What's your specialty?
Steaks. He's a medium rare guy.
Yeah.
He changed me to medium rare, but steaks are always. We have those like every other week, one time at least. So just to know that we made it through that.
We kind of do like a little family meal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the neater of the two of you in your living arrangement?
That is me.
Is that true?
That is true.
Who cleans? That.
We both clean.
Is he lying?
He just stays cleaner.
Yeah. I stay
Mine,
cleaner.
Mine, I'll clean, and then like the next day it'll be dirty. I don't know how.
A tornado hit. I don't know.
No idea how.
This happened.
I think it's my other roommate just coming to mess with me.
Kelly McGee and Nick Kelly here in studio. Okay, let's go into the weight room. At Arizona State, what can he do in the weight room that you cannot?
This guy could squat almost twice as much as I could squat. He could squat. I think this upcoming week is our max week, and he's going to do 600 pounds, and I could just do like in the 400s, and
it's just terrible to me. 400.
Yeah.
It doesn't get any better.
Come on, get out of here. Get out of here.
It's progress. I came off two knee surgeries this summer, so it's definitely progress for me. But I wish it was higher. But no, this guy he could power clean and squat more than I can, and it's just ridiculous.
What can he do that you can't?
Bench press. This man, he came in like just instantly got good at bench press, and I've been working on it for like 2 or 3 years. He came in just instantly surpassed me. Now like he works out across from me, and I'll be doing my weight. I'll be happy with like 315 repping that, and then I look over and Nick's got like 365 doing it easy. And so it's just one of those, like, he just always beating me on the bench.
Hmm. And what can Christian Westerman do in the weight room?
Okay. That's not fair. He's not even here. What are you talking about?
Right. I think he's actually lifting right now.
Do you guys, when he gets in the weight room, do you guys just take a big step back and say, wow?
No, he's...
Is there really that much difference?
It's that much difference.
For bench, it's that much difference for me.
Yeah, bench. Squat, Billy has him on squat, actually.
And I like to compete, so I'm close somewhat to power clean, or at least I was, and then squat. So we always have that competition where I'll be doing, like, say, 500 for a set. Christian will have 495, then he'll do 500. And then I'll be like, well, now I got to do 505. And so all of a sudden I'm doing, like, 530 just because I got to beat this man.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And then with bench, Christian just surpasses everybody in the weight room with
the
that.
The guy did 315 20 times.
Yeah, that, yeah. I know, you don't believe it until you see the video, but it's ridiculous how much that guy could lift and move weight.
When you guys are out on the field, what can DJ Foster do other than run really fast?
He makes us look good.
We have some video of DJ, and when you see him and where he's come from and where he is for the coming season, what do you see?
I would say DJ, they moved in the wide receiver. As you see here, Christian making a nice cut block, but DJ is an athlete. He's a really humble kid, has breakaway speed, and he's got to be a powerhouse for this season. Every day in the weight room, he's getting stronger. He's becoming more and more of a leader every week, and I like to see DJ run the ball a lot.
He's a real hard worker, too, because we came in about the same time, and I remember he, like, coming in, just Coach Graham asked him to play a role, and he did it. He had a great season when he first started, and, like, I think each season, like, he's been improving and getting better, and it's been real cool to watch him just, like, grow as an athlete, too.
We've seen the program grow, I have, through the years, to a point now where I feel like it's in the best position that it's been in since the Rose Bowl year with Jake Plummer. I just see a lot of stability on all fronts, off the field, on the field. I'm curious from your guys' perspective, when you first arrived at ASU, if you've sensed that things have changed and progressed, not just wins and losses, but in a way, I mean, we're looking at the stadium finally getting done, mm-hmm. and we're looking at just accountability and if there's a problem off the field that it's immediately addressed and moved on from. I'm just curious, as you guys have, from day one to now, have you seen the program improve?
Well, I came in with Coach Graham. I was actually recruited by him. So when I came, it was when he first started, and it's a huge change. When I came, like, the team was, like, you had your cliques. Like, the senior O-line, like, the starters were together, and then, like, everyone else. And, like, now, I mean, we're pretty much a family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can call anyone on the team and hang out with them, and it's not like I'm forcing it. Like, and two, like, just everyone's commitment has changed so much. I remember when we first got here, no one really wanted to work out. No one was doing extra. But now, like, I see kids in the weight room all the time doing either working on their technique or anything like that. People watching film all the time. And, like, it's just a huge difference between the team that I joined and then the team now.
Mm. How about you, Nick?
Like Billy said, when I first came in, it was very clicky. You couldn't really hang out with certain people on the team. But I feel like the way that Coach Graham recruits the coaching staff, the way they work, they're just high character guys. They all have the same personalities about them. The people they recruit, all the kids want. They want to succeed. They want to learn. They're not athletes on the field. But they're also athletes. Like they're also excelling in the classroom as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big thing in our program is excel off the field as well on the field.
There was a lot of buzz last night and today about one player being let go from the program, a five-star linebacker. When that happens within the family, is it just move on, next man up mentality? What's it like when that news comes out?
It's like we didn't really get a chance to meet him because it happened as soon as he got here. But it that stuff happens. But the way Coach Graham runs his program, he means business. He doesn't want something like that to ruin our reputation as a program and stuff like and a football program as that. But I feel that him letting him go was the right move, but because of he needs to we have a standard at ASU and he needs to hold it accountable.
What about you, Billy?
I mean, I completely agree. I mean, you heard for the guy, definitely. But Coach Graham, I mean, day one has always been about like the three things, which is character, discipline, and toughness. And he's always made sure that what we do on and off the field agrees to that. Each year we have to sign like a contract saying that we'll be like we'll uphold to all those. And so, I mean, I agree with Nick on saying like it was a smart move, but you still feel for the kid because clearly he had talent and just made some wrong choices.
Camp Tonizona, the worst part about Camp T is?
The twin beds.
Yes.
The twin beds for sure. For sure.
The best part of Camp T is?
The weather.
Being out there. I love, I always love the nature and just being out there.
Mm-hmm. You're a fisherman?
I like to fish and hunt. Yes,
yeah.
sir.
Yeah.
I'm a true Texas. but it's just nice to kind of get away and just kind of be with your teammate. And so, like, every time we go out there, we just come closer as a team. And so it's nice, too, especially if you're new, we kind of get to, like, have a stronger bond. So that's probably one of my favorites.
How's Burko going to do? How's Burko going to do? On the field.
As you saw last year, he did great, and he's done nothing but get better. So I'm really excited to be able to get out there and help him because I know he's going to do amazing.
Yeah, no doubt in my mind that Burko's got to be the stud this year, the quarterback. Burko is a leader. I love that guy. He's my quarterback. We always hang out. He loves the O-line. And
Does he take care of you guys?
Oh, he takes care of us. Yeah, he takes care of us. Yeah? He'll surprise us with Chick-fil-A some days. Or
that's a surprise.
Yeah, he'll bring the O-line. Nice, yeah, so it's very, very nice. Very nice. Gets us a smile. Gets us ready for the next day. But he makes sure that we're always working at a high level, high intensity, just like our offense.
Before I let you guys go, how's school? Academically, where are you at? How's it going?
Well, Billy just graduated.
I actually graduated in May, but I'm going to actually do a double major. And so I'm going to get mine in exercise and wellness because what I want to do after is kind of work with high school kids and be like a trainer for them.
Cool.
Because what I've realized is there's so many high school kids that come to the college level, especially like O-line wise, and they don't know like the difference. They don't know the technique. And so I want to kind of help bridge that gap and just make sure they're ready. So,
how about you?
I'm a criminal justice major. I'm going to graduate next spring. But my grades are good, and I have a 3.0 as a
scholar baller.
Scholar baller. And I'm not really sure what I want to do after college.
Probably football ends today.
Yeah, I'll probably end up coaching. Honestly, I love coaching. I got to work a few of the big man challenges that we have at ASU, and I like to coach, and I like the atmosphere. I just can't get away from football, you know?
But you're seeing your name on all these preseason watch lists. There's NFL talk. How do you handle all that?
I don't think about it. I just got to stay humble and hungry, you know? So I
keep him humble and hungry?
Of course.
Yeah.
Not hungry, but humble.
We're always hungry.
All right, you said criminal justice. So let's look at this backdrop because I understand we have it now. Let's see Nick, if you're thinking of criminal justice – Billy said he wanted a backdrop made
there
after.
There we go.
that's Well, there's no picture, though. We have to get a picture of you.
You know what? There. The Texas flag represents Texas Philly to a T.
There so. We go. Yeah. I sleep underneath it.
So, hey, follow him on Twitter at BMcGee.
75, of course.
How many people for you at the A&M game do you estimate in Houston?
Let's just say I can't have enough. Like, I need, as far as, like, ticket-wise.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's about a three-hour drive, and so I already have people saying, like, hey, we're coming to the game. I'd say at least 20 people. Because that's also going to be my first start, too.
Look at that.
There we go.
That looks sweet. It's the first time and probably the only time we'll ever put a backdrop up for somebody who's a guest. I don't know.
Well, I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thank you.
Good stuff.
Thank
you. Appreciate it.
Billy McGee. Thanks for having us.
Sure. Nick Kelly. Come back again. This was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Bring
yes,
food. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports.